you, Mr. President. I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Senator Michael Jungbauer.
Morning. That's a pretty long one, but that's all right. We'll let you go.
Well, greetings, everyone. It is so fun, and it's my pleasure to be up here today with so many new people because there's so many minds that I get to have a little fun with today. So you got a nice chaplain the other day that told everybody, you know, to say, I love you, and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, I just think that you can't be mad at somebody if you give them a hug. So I want everybody to start out with a hug. Come on, new people especially, new people first. Hey, we got
Yeah, you almost forgot.
All right.
Nice, okay. Sinjiv, he's getting the whole room.
Sinjiv's having fun. He's working the room. All right. There's a point at which we can't get too carried away, all right? As I was thinking about what to pray for and where we need help as legislators, you know, it occurred to me that our constituents put us here because they believe that we're wise, that we seek out all sides of an issue. And most of our constituents constantly do pray for us. And I thought about things that I look at when I do legislation. And so my prayer is geared around the what ifs. What are we thinking on both sides of the thing? So let's pray. Heavenly Father, we just thank you for bringing us together. We thank you that you have placed us all here in the legislature and that you trust us to serve the citizens of Minnesota. Heavenly Father, what if we give all the children health insurance and have no money left for the at-risk youth programs? What if we rebuild our roads and have no money left to pick up the disabled? What if we solve all the environmental problems and leave the poor with no money for housing, electricity, and water? What if we build our education system, fully fund technology in the classrooms, build efficient new buildings, and have no money left over to train our teachers in a technological, globally advanced world? Father, I just ask you to give us a vision for the future of Minnesota. Things are changing so fast. Our children need the best. Our citizens need the best. Cause us to look at both ends of every spectrum and agree to and come to the middle in agreements that do the best for our citizens, and we'll give you all the glory and honor. Amen.
Thank you. That's good. Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzel, Bonhoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Hand, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubli, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Limmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Neville, Olsen, Olson G, Olson M, Ortman, Pappas, Parisot, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stump, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger. A quorum is present.
Quorum is present. Next order of business is reports of committee. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, thank you. I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted with the exception of the reports pertaining to appointments.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator.
Mr. President, Pogemiller. I move that the reports pertaining to appointments be laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business, second reading of Senate bills. There's one on, printed on today's agenda. Without objection, second reading. Next order of business is second reading of House bills. There's one on today's agenda. With no objection, second reading of House bills. There are a number of authors' motions printed on today's agenda. Without objection, we will take them as one motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dibble, did you have a motion to make?
Mr. President, thank you. I move that Senate File 432 be withdrawn from the Committee on Finance and re-referred to the Committee on State and Local Government Operations and Oversight. This was just a referral and error, and the chairs are aware.
You talked to the chairs, and
yes,
everybody's
been spoken with. Yeah.
On the motion by Senator Dibble, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's a one resolution on today's agenda. It's printed on today's agenda. Without objection, the resolution will be sent to the Rules Committee. Next order of business is a Senate calendar.
Third reading.
Secretary will give Senate File 123 its third reading.
Senate File 123, a bill for an act relating to elections, requiring pre-election reports of certain contributions to political committees, political funds, and party units, etc.
Discussion on Senate File 123. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on final passage. Senator Murphy. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There'll be 61 ayes, 0 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Murphy just walked out the door.
He said he's ready.
See, he's next up.
The next order of business on today's agenda is the Senate consent calendar. There is one bill on the consent calendar to consider this morning. Be Senate File 138. Senator Murphy to explain the bill. Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 138 be never mind.
Yeah, we're in the Senate. We're not in the Committee of the Whole, but just explain the bill to the...
Mr. President, members, Senate File 138 is a simple bill that asks the Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture in consultation with the Commissioner of Health and hopefully the folks over at the University of Minnesota to evaluate potential hazards posed by plants that are sold at the retail level. We heard testimony in committee that many of these plants are poisonous and noxious, and they have no warning labels on them. We would at least like to know which plants are which, what are the incidences of poisoning either to human or to livestock or to cats, dogs, that type of stuff. But it's just a study. There's no money hooked onto it. This is a good piece of legislation, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. President, and I would ask the support of the members.
Discussion on Senate File 138. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 138 its third reading.
Senate File 138, a bill for an act relating to agriculture requiring plant hazards evaluation and a report to the legislature.
Secretary will take the roll. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Senator Sharon. Secretary will close the roll. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next order of business is the general orders calendar. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate do now resolve itself into a committee of the whole for the purposes of taking up the general orders calendar.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
And Mr. President, Senator, I would designate that we take up number 3 and number 4 on general orders.
The first bill this morning on general orders will be Senate File 255, Senator Wergen. Senator Wergen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that when the Senate do arise, that Senate File 255 be recommended to pass.
Senator Wergen on the bill.
Mr. President, this bill, I appreciate the opportunity for the full Senate to hear it. It deals with Minnesota Statute 16C verse 16, Subdivision 5. That statute provides for the designation of targeted groups for the purpose of state contracts only. This bill adds to that list of targeted groups veteran-owned and operated businesses. It's a very limited category. It's veteran-owned and operated businesses. It should be noted that there are only approximately 600 veteran-owned businesses in the state of Minnesota currently, and that not nearly all of those businesses would qualify for state government contracts, so that's the only portion that it deals with. It is small businesses as designated in the law. It's not carte blanche for every business. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this is because as our veterans come back, especially at this point in time and other points in their lives, their businesses have been interrupted for a year or more. They've simply had to put them on hold. Anyone here that has owned a business knows that when you have to essentially shut a business down for a year, you may as well be starting over from scratch. I also believe that this is a group of people that have fully served our country in one way or another, and that they deserve this recognition in our law. And so I put this bill in, and I'm hoping that the members of the Senate would confer with me that this is a good bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Further discussion on Senate File 255, Senator Vickerman.
Mr. President, members of the Senate, this is a very important piece of legislation that we're trying to put together in a very big package. And I agree with the Senator. We can't do enough for our veterans that are coming back from this Iraq war. And so I would hope that you would join me along with Senator Wergen and move this bill forward. I did not need to hear it in our Veterans Committee because I wanted to fast track it and move it on. So it went right straight to the next committee. So members, when you vote for this, this is just one of the several things that we need to do for our veterans.
Any further discussion on Senate File 255? Seeing none, the question reoccurs on the motion of Senator Wergen that Senate File 255 be recommended to pass. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Next consideration will be Senate File Number 4, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that when this committee do arise, that Senate File 4 be recommended to pass.
Senator Anderson to explain the bill. Senator Anderson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Senate File 4 is the Renewable Energy Standard Bill. And I want to start by recognizing and thanking Senator Pretner Solon, who's the new chair of the Energy Committee and has done a lot of heavy lifting on this bill and worked very, very hard to get a consensus in an area that has been just a tiny bit controversial in past years. And I'm just so pleased that we've been able to do that. And so Senator Pretner Solon gets a lot of credit, and this bill did pass unanimously out of her committee. So I'm very grateful to that committee as well. This amended bill that I have in front of you, it's quite a bit different than it was as introduced on the first day of session, and we passed a delete all amendment in the committee. The result is a very strong bill, which I believe will make Minnesota the renewable energy leader of the entire United States. This bill sets very aggressive standards for developing new renewable energy projects, especially for wind development, and for that reason it will be the strongest law in the country. It's wonderful that with such a good, strong bill that I wholeheartedly support, that we were able to get a consensus and get agreement from all the Minnesota-based utilities, from all the environmental advocates, from the Chamber of Commerce, and from the Governor's Office. And all of those stakeholders, after probably hundreds of hours of discussion, have all agreed to the exactly what's in this bill and to agree not to support any amendments to this language. And so for that reason, I am very committed to this language as passed out of the committee, and I would ask members to honor that consensus process and that agreement and not to support any amendments as well. And I will oppose any amendments to this bill. Let me tell you why I think this is a great bill that we can be very, very proud of supporting today. It's truly a win-win for the economy and the environment in Minnesota. First of all, as I said, this law, when passed, will make Minnesota the national leader in renewable energy development. In recent years, we've lost our leadership position. This bill will send a very strong message across the country that Minnesota is open for green business. Some 21 other states have already passed a renewable energy standard, and they are reaping the benefits of that policy in their own states. While we've missed some opportunities for attracting wind turbine developers to our state because we don't have a standard in place, this will change things. The second reason why this bill is so good for our state is that a strong renewable energy standard will bring jobs and investments to our state, especially across rural Minnesota. Literally billions of dollars of investment will be needed to build all the transmission and all the wind turbines and all the related components to fulfill the standards in this bill. Renewable electricity generation creates far more jobs than fossil fuel generation does. So we're looking at thousands of new jobs in manufacturing, construction, engineering, and all the related pieces and services that go with this very clean industry. These are good quality, high-wage jobs that can support families across our state. Third reason why this is such a win-win for Minnesota: we will significantly reduce air and water pollution in our state and nearby by producing so much of our electricity from clean, renewable sources. That means far less greenhouse gas emissions coming from Minnesota, less mercury, fewer particulates in the air, and healthier citizens across our state. Finally, this bill starts the process. This bill sets our state on the road towards energy independence. And I think Americans all across the country agree that it's time for us to stop relying on foreign sources of energy. In Minnesota, we import more electricity than any other state, but we're sitting on a gold mine of natural resources. This bill will move us towards the pathway of being able to tap into that gold mine and start producing that energy here at home from our clean renewable sources. Here's what the amended bill does. I'll go through it. Senate File 4, it's not a very long bill. Essentially, what it will do is set two different renewable electricity standards for different groups of utilities in our state. XL Energy will have a standard of 30% renewable electricity by 2020. That's a minimum. So they will have to have at least 30% renewable energy by 2020. All the other utilities in our state will have a standard requirement of 25% renewable electricity by the year 2025. And there's a number of benchmarks along the way to get them there. So when you look at the benchmark in 2020, where will we be? In the year 2020, this bill requires that XL will be at 30% renewables. All other utilities will be at 20% renewables. XL is about half the electricity in our state. And so what that means is statewide, by the year 2020, we will have 25% renewably produced electricity, which was the original goal of Senate File 4. We just do it in a way that helps to accommodate the different needs of different utilities. And of XL Energy's 30%, 25% of that has to be wind. So we know that at least 25% of their portfolio will be wind. So to go through the sections, in Section 1, Subdivision 1, we make some minor changes in the definition of renewables. In Subdivision 2, we modify the current law, which is the renewable energy objective. And right now, under current law, utilities need to make a good faith objective. And by 2010, they would have to be at 5% renewables. We increased that to 7% by 2010. Then, starting in 2012, the standard kicks in. And if you look at the bill, page 2 to 3, you can see the benchmarks for renewable development set in those sections in 2012, 2016, 2020, and 2025. And so there's one set of standards on page 2 for the non-XL utilities. The set of standards on page 3 is for XL, so they're higher. Subdivision 2B talks about the language that the utilities were especially concerned about, as well as the chamber. What this section does, Subdivision 2, says that if a utility faces significant problems in meeting their requirements, the Public Utilities Commission must delay or modify implementation of the standard, but only under strict criteria laid out in this subdivision can they do that. In summary, the factors that they consider relate to a significant rate impact, significant problems of reliability, or a significant cost impact, or they can relate to factors like transmission or equipment barriers, but only if they're out of the utility's control. And in weighing these factors, the PUC has to respect the legislature's preference, as expressed in this bill, the goal of achieving more renewable energy and meeting the standard. One other piece that's of note is that the Chamber of Commerce was especially concerned about talking about cost competitiveness for utility customers. That language is in this subdivision as well, as a factor that the PUC can consider. Subdivision 2C, the PUC may consider a request to delay implementation of a standard in the integrated resource planning process. Subdivision 2D, the commission is to monitor compliance. Subdivision 4 relates to renewable energy credits and sets a deadline by which we must have a renewable energy credit trading system in place of January of 08. and set some standards for that process. That process is already well underway because of legislation passed several years ago. And it requires all utilities to participate and limits Xcel so that they cannot sell credits until 2021. There's some stricken language that's removing some biomass set-asides and the Prairie Island mandates that were passed a number of years ago. And Subdivision 7 relates to compliance. And essentially, in summary, this says that the PUC has to make sure that utilities comply. If they don't, the PUC can order them to either build the renewable generation or purchase renewable energy or purchase credits. And only if they don't follow any of the PUC's orders, then the PUC can impose a financial penalty, which cannot exceed the amount it would cost to achieve compliance. Subdivision 9, the commission is directed to interpret this law to maximize benefits to Minnesotans and balance other factors. Section 2 sets up a series of expectations for utilities to move forward with planning transmission so that we have a plan in place that will serve the renewable energy standard requirements. And they have to report back by November of this year to the Public Utilities Commission with that plan and involve stakeholders in the process. And finally, Section 3 repeals the green pricing law in 2010. That is the bill as amended. I strongly support this. I think it's a great bill for Minnesota, and I hope all members of the Senate support it enthusiastically as well. I would be happy to take any questions.
Further discussion on Senate file number 4, Senator Prettner-Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also like to commend Senator Anderson on her bill and for her willingness to be tenacious and to have the history that she brought forward with her into this bill. As many of you know who have been around for a while, energy policy has been very contentious around here in the legislature. And I thought it was time that people sit down and understand what energy policy is all about, and that all the affected parties get a chance to talk to one another and to try to understand the different perspectives. And to that end, we developed a set of stakeholder meetings that met for the entire month of January. And as Senator Anderson said, for at least 100 hours, perhaps 200, poor Mr. Fuller is the one that was at every one of those, as were 30 to 40 stakeholders. And everybody that is affected was invited to these meetings. What we found is that there was much more consensus, there was much more agreement than there was disagreement. There were ways that we had to work out differences, but there was definitely much more agreement than there was disagreement. And everybody agreed that we need to move toward a higher renewable standard, that we needed less reliance on fossil fuel. And out of this stakeholders group came people that are now talking to each other, and much more agreement to move forward also on other energy policy that will be facing this committee in the near future. This is a very strong bill. It is the strongest bill in the nation. I urge your support for it. It is something that we as Minnesotans can be proud of, and as Senator Anderson has said, could help establish a business or an industry for wind industry, for biomass industry, for renewable energy within our rural communities that are struggling with what to do with farmland that they are unable to farm or is not productive. This gives them alternatives in those areas. And we do have some areas of the state, particularly along the western border and the southern border, that have a significant amount of wind, and we can be great producers and generators of this wind. So I urge your support of this bill. It, not only is it a strong bill, but it also protects the ratepayers and the utilities against significant rate impacts, unreliability of service. Any delays in construction of transmission lines or inability to obtain necessary equipment will be noted and will help the utility companies to amend their plans, which will be reviewed by the Public Utility Commissions through their integrated resource plans on a regular basis. So they will have ongoing feedback about how they are meeting the standard and if additional assistance is necessary in order for them to move faster or if we need to make some changes to help them along the way. Again, this is a very strong bill. I do urge your support for it. I ask that there not be any amendments. The stakeholders have all agreed to this. They have agreed to support it as is without amendments. And I urge your support. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate file number 4. Senator Wergen, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Anderson, I don't serve on the Energy Committee, so I just have some questions. I really appreciate the way you've worked with the stakeholders and changed the bill from what we've seen in the past, and I can tell that there's been significant work into it. The question that I have, though, a couple of them, can you tell me how Minnesota currently compares with renewable production in the states that surround us? Are we ahead, behind, where, how are we right at this point in time?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Wergen. I don't know the exact numbers, but we have lost our first or second or third place position in the last few years where we were. Iowa recently jumped ahead of us in the number of megawatts of wind that they're producing. The Dakotas are not anywhere close, although they do have the wind resources, but they don't have the policies that have really promoted the development of renewable energy like we have in Iowa has.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Morgan.
Senator Anderson, this is a green bill, and I appreciate that, but there's another set of green bills that we as senators have to think about, and that's the green bills in our constituents' pockets. And so I'm glad to see that in your bill that significant rate increases would trigger possible putting off of these targets. Could you tell me what you mean by significant so that when I get that asked that question at home, I can tell my rate holders what significant means that triggers some slowdown?
Senator Anderson.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Wergen, I don't know if I can give you an exact definition because we didn't want to put a percent or a number. That would be really hard to decide what that would mean. But I think what you should tell your constituents that will give them comfort, number one, is that wind is competitive with fossil fuel generation right now, that it's the cheapest form of new electricity generation in the state right now, and that the price of coal is expected to rise sharply in the next decade because restrictions on CO2 emissions are inevitable at the national level and possibly at a lot of state levels as well. A lot of business leaders are recognizing and have testified on this bill over the last few years as we've debated it, that they believe that putting more renewables, especially wind, into their portfolio of electricity is actually a hedge against future energy price hikes. Because one thing that wind has going for it is the price of fuel is constant. That's zero, of course. The reason I was very comfortable with having that language in the bill is that all the expert advice that we have indicates that this will not raise ratepayers' costs. And in fact, over the long run, I think it's going to save ratepayers' money.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wergen, Senator Prettner-Solin, did you wish to help answer? Would that be all right, Senator Wergen?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Wergen, I think it's important to note that Minnesota is the greatest importer of energy in the country, that in excess of 90% of our energy comes from other countries or other states. And so this helps us to have greater reliance on our own energy if we can start to generate resources within our own state. And that also then helps us to minimize cost impacts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Prettner-Solin, that leads into my last question beautifully. Windmills don't turn when the wind isn't blowing. I think we all know that, and that that means that windmills are not necessarily by any means our most constant or reliable source of energy. They are a source, I will grant you, but not the most reliable or constant. Does this bill, what does it do to protect our base load current? In other words, to make sure that when the wind isn't blowing, we don't have to import all of our power, but instead we're also doing a complete comprehensive package of energy to protect the consumers.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing I didn't mention in my comments is the wind integration study that was just released that we spent some time discussing in Senator Pretner Solon's committee. And this was commissioned by ordered by the legislature 2 years ago in my omnibus bill. And it was done by a group of scientists and experts, and everyone agrees that it's an objective, good study. And it was run by Ken Wolf at the Commerce Department. What that study determined is that you can integrate high levels of wind into our electric grid. And what they were studying specifically was whether you could integrate levels of 15, 20, and 25% wind into our electric grid across the state without impairing reliability or without it being too costly. And the conclusions came back very, very positively and said you can do this, you can integrate it, and you can do it in a manner that is of a very minor cost. And so we have that information. We also know that in order to meet these high numbered, these goals that are more significant percentages than we've seen in the past, wind projects will have to be distributed around more parts of the state. And the wind map, which is available from the Department of Commerce, that came out a couple of years ago, shows that at a certain turbine height, 80 meters, which is a very highly efficient wind turbine, about half the state's landmass is actually suitable for producing wind in a cost-competitive way. And if you spread it around more geographic areas, the western, central, and southern part of the state in particular, then that increases the reliability because the wind blows at different speeds in different places at different times. So the more geographic diversity you have, the more that improves the availability of the wind. I don't think anybody expects that we can have 100% wind-generated electricity grid, but there's plenty of experience out there around the world with 25% levels that are extremely successful. So I think it's just our engineers are up to the task, and we'll be able to figure that out.
Senator Pretner Solon, in regards to this.
Yes, Chair Mattson, Senator Wergen, I'd like to also expand on that. And it's important to know that wind is not the only renewable resource that this governs, that biomass and thermal energy and solar energy and all the other renewable energies, hydro energy, are also part of the renewable energy policy. And there is an understanding that not all of the electric energy can come from wind resources because of its interruptibility. However, there was enough confidence in this that all the utilities, all the munis, all the co-ops, with the exception of one who had some concern about transmissions, agreed that they could work and move forward with the impact.
Senator Hand, Senator Scoie, and Senator Bach, in that order. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Anderson, I guess I should say Mr. Chairman. Sorry. I'd like to ask a couple of questions. I'm also not in your committee that looked at this bill, but just for the help of the body and for the public, can you, what is the current amount of wind energy that we produce in the state of Minnesota today?
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chair, it's somewhere in the 800 megawatts vicinity, and this bill, at its ultimate conclusion by 2025, will be somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 to 6,000 megawatts.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Anderson. Can you tell us about the emissions, the CO2 emissions that are being generated currently in Minnesota? What is the status of the emissions right now? What kind of emissions and what is the amount that is being generated by current power source?
Senator Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I don't have that number.
And Mr. Chairman?
Senator Hamp.
Thank you. Do we know what the reduction in emissions will be from the passage of this bill? Do we know the quantity or the percentage of emissions that will be reduced by the passage of this bill?
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I tried to get that number, and I do not have a direct answer for you. Some people have tried to extrapolate how much CO2 is displaced for one wind turbine, but I'm afraid I don't have that number right now. I can get that, though. So I apologize for not having that today.
Senator Hamm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Senator Anderson. I've tried to find some answers to that, and I could be wrong, and I guess that's why I was asking. But my understanding is that there's about 40,000 tons of CO2 that is emitted currently, and that the estimates by the Department of Commerce would say that this bill would result in about a 2% reduction in emissions. So we're going to get a potential 2% reduction in emissions by the passage of this bill. And that might be a good thing, but one of the questions I would like to have answered as well is, what is the cost going to be to ratepayers? And I know in your testimony you said that you thought it was going to be negligible, but I understand that hasn't been determined yet. And it occurs to me that if we were voting on whether we were going to build another power plant, another coal power plant or a nuclear power plant, one of the questions that certainly would be required before we agreed to adopt that was, what would be the effect to ratepayers on the building of another power plant? And I'm just wondering, should we perhaps delay the adoption of this bill until we know what the impact to ratepayers would be? Do you know what that is, or do you have any more precise answer?
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just on the CO2 issue, the big picture maybe I can answer, and that is that we know that generally CO2 emissions come from the electricity sector, the transportation sector, and then buildings, which use a combination of different kinds of fuels and electricity. So generally the numbers I've seen say that electricity is responsible for maybe 40% of CO2 emissions, maybe 50%. I'm giving you ballpark numbers because I don't remember the exact number. And so in Minnesota, if a quarter of our electricity is coming from renewable sources, I think it's going to be a pretty significant number. But it's not anywhere near 100%. So we have a lot long ways to go if we're concerned about reducing emissions. This is one piece of the solution. But I don't think 2% is correct. But I don't have an answer on that. As to what the exact number is, but it should be in the double digit numbers at least. Ratepayers, there's a lot of ratepayer protections built into this bill, and there's a lot of ratepayer protections that are already in law. And that's a big part of what the Public Utilities Commission has to do every time they approve a certificate of need for any kind of new electricity generating facility, whether it be a coal plant or a wind farm or anything else. And so that's primarily what the PUC's job is, and there's a whole statute book that informs them about how to protect ratepayers. And we have put a lot of specifics in this bill, again, that say that if there's a significant impact on rates, the utility can go in and ask to delay implementation or modify implementation. Not repeal the standard, but to modify or delay its implementation for that utility. And so I think we have the balance here that will move us towards our aggressive renewable energy goals, but will also protect utilities and ratepayers. And if we didn't have that balance, I'm certain that the utilities and the chamber and the governor's office would not have agreed to this bill.
And Mr. Chairman, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator Anderson. Well, I guess that is kind of the heart of my concern about what is the benefit that we will see from passage of this bill, and what will the cost be to achieve that benefit? And it strikes me that the benefit might be very small. You say it might be higher, but that's not known. And the cost might be reasonable, it might be significant. We're not quite sure what those meanings are of those words yet, but we don't know that either. I do know that there's estimates about the power line transmission, or the transmission lines that are required would be something in the $8 to $10 billion range to build those transmission lines. There have been estimates by the Department of Commerce on the potential effect of rates on passage of this. I just am wondering whether this is the right time to do this with so much uncertainty about its effect and its cost. It seems to me that the one thing that I would say that we know for certain about this is it will raise costs to ratepayers. We just don't know how much. And there is an estimated benefit, but we don't know how big that benefit is. And I just am troubled by this policy that requires, that mandates these things to occur when we have so much uncertainty about what the effects are going to be and what the cost to consumers, ratepayers, citizens, businesses will be. And I think, Senator Anderson, you made a point in your comments about that wind energy is very competitive and it is comparable to other forms of energy production. And I'm wondering if that is so, why we would need this. If it really is true that the way to generate energy through wind is the same as any other form or competitive, then we wouldn't need to do this. It seems to me that the producers would say, well, we want to produce energy at a very competitive way, and here's another way of doing it, and if there's really no difference in cost to consumers, ratepayers, let's do this instead of that. They don't do that currently. What we're saying is they must do this. So there must be some reason why they're not just willingly going forward and saying, let's do this. We have had an objective in place. I think we've made progress on an objective through the market, that if people have voluntarily decided this makes sense to us economically, the timetables make sense. It seems to me that the market is working pretty well. I think the market understands what consumers are willing to pay and what the constraints are to build these things, and it seems to me that's been working. I'm always troubled when we have committees and we in the legislature think that we understand things of a very complex nature much better than the people who are actually doing it, and that we have the ability to decide what is the timetable and what is the price and what are the things that need to be done to accomplish this. So can you answer why, if it's competitive, we need to have a mandate? Why do we need to force people to do this if it's competitive? Now, you've mentioned that everybody agrees to this. And I understand that there is agreement and there are stakeholders that have come to terms on this thing, and I think that's fine, and I think that's an improvement from where we were before. But it kind of strikes me that the agreement we have is a little bit like if you're walking down the street and somebody walks up to you and says, I'd like you to give me all the money you have in your pockets, or give me half. And you say, well, okay, well, I'll give you half. And then to walk away from that and say, well, that was a voluntary transaction, and we agreed to give you half our money. That doesn't strike me as being completely voluntary. I think the reason there's agreement is because there's concern that if we don't agree to something like this, there'll be something even more dramatic, more drastic imposed on the public and on ratepayers, and so this is a compromise. And I understand that. That's what happens. But I think that we need to have a clear understanding of what these costs are and what the benefits will be, and I guess I would ask you to consider maybe delaying this bill until such time as we know those things.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple more points I want to make. And, you know, Senator Hahn, I've been working on this bill for at least 6 years, so I don't think now is the time for delay. I think it's time to move forward, and I think time is of the essence. We face urgent issues, and it's time to lead in Minnesota. And that's what this bill will do, is make us leaders. Just a couple of things about cost that I haven't said before. A number of major Minnesota utilities have already stated in the past couple of years that incorporating more renewable energy into their systems has actually saved ratepayers money. And recently when Xcel came in with their newest plan for a major contract for more energy, they were directed, and Commerce directed them to go back and come back with a newer plan with more renewables in it because it was too costly. And so in order to save money, they put more renewables in. Wind is now the least cost resource for electricity. So we already know that it saves ratepayers money. It's not speculation. And utilities are embracing that, but they're not moving quite as fast as I would like them to, and I think as the public interest is demanding. I think the utilities are trying their very best to get there, and they've committed to meeting these very aggressive goals. So they're on the right track, and I think we should encourage them and support them in that.
Senator, we're going a little bit out of order. I think you want to speak to this, Senator Vandiver. Okay, you may. Then we're going to go to Scoy, Bach, and Rosa.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Hand, to your point, I think you're right, and generally I would agree with you. Why require something? Why not just have the market determine the route that the utilities take? But I think if you look historically at times of crisis or when we're at war or we get in situations where, possibly shortages, that the government has taken action, and at those times it hasn't always been the best thing, but I think in long-term planning and looking at economic security for our state, that a movement towards energy independence is, I think, wise, and that the government or the governor proposing this and having us go in this direction is something that, yes, it's not a standard market response, but in the long run for our state, it will encourage, I think, energy independence, and I think that that's very healthy for us.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. First, I'd like to thank Senator Anderson and Chair of the Energy Committee, Senator Prettner-Solon, for their effort and their work with the stakeholder groups that are providing electrical energy to Minnesotans. Because that's basically what this is. It's an electric energy bill. And yes, there is some biomass in here, and I'm assuming that is biomass gasification, but it appears to be mostly a wind electric energy bill. And that's fine, that's a worthwhile goal. But for me, when you think about wind, and we've had a little bit of discussion about it today, you do have to have a base plant somewhere to provide the backup power for when the wind isn't blowing. And if you're going to do the wind integration part of wind energy, you're going to have a lot of infrastructure of wind towers, so when the wind is blowing in differing rates across the state. But what I'd like to think of for wind electricity is that it's really efficient when it's used to make another energy source like hydrogen. And that's mentioned in here. That's a good thing. But there's some opportunities for wind that aren't mentioned in here, like anhydrous ammonia. The University of Minnesota Morris is developing a process to turn wind, the electricity from wind, and taking the nitrogen out of the air and making anhydrous ammonia. That's a very good renewable energy source, and it's a way to be 100% efficient when you're using wind. But back to the discussion about energy independence and, let's see, renewable energy objectives. And as I said, this really is an electric bill. We've heard talk about foreign sources of energy and importing energy. But, really, when I think about the foreign policy issues that we have that are causing us energy consternation, it's not wind, it's not electricity, it's crude oil. That's what we're importing into the country that is causing so much problem today. And there's no discussion about what we're going to do with regard to the energy that comes from crude oil. Why is there no discussion of ethanol or biodiesel or that sort of renewable energy in this bill? It just doesn't make sense. We've talked about the carbon dioxide that we're going to try to remove from our air. Over 40% of the carbon dioxide emitted in this state comes from tailpipes. We can do something to address that, but this bill does nothing to address that. Members, I think it would be wise to take this renewable energy standard and make it a real renewable energy standard that addresses the energy that's used in the state of Minnesota, electricity and transportation and other energy sources. And so with that, I would ask for this to be sent back to committee and have them develop a true renewable energy standard that we can all be supportive of.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Scoy, I agree with everything you say except the sending it back to committee part. I don't think that's necessary. And the reason is that you're absolutely right. Those are critical issues. And those are absolutely on the very front of my agenda and on the Senate's agenda, and I know on Senator Pretner Solon's agenda, as well as Senator Vickerman's in the Ag Committee. We have a range of very important energy bills that we're going to be dealing with this session. This is only the first one. And as much as I am passionate about passing this law, and I think it will really help us, you're right, it only deals with the electricity sector. And if we're going to do anything about global warming, climate change, CO2 emissions, we have to look at the whole range of sources. And transportation is a big one. If we are serious about energy independence, we have to look at our fuel sources and our use of foreign oil. And Minnesota is already in a leadership position when it comes to biofuels. We already have a renewable energy standard for ethanol, 20% ethanol requirement that we already passed. And I supported that, of course. But we can't rest on those laurels. We have a long ways to go. And so, Senator Scoy, I guess I would just encourage you to look at Senator Kubley's bill that deals with the next generation of biofuels and trying to develop cellulosic ethanol and use prairie grasses to make fuels. And I would invite you to look at some other bills that are coming on energy efficiency and saving energy and setting higher goals for reducing our energy consumption. And I have a bill on reducing CO2 emissions across sectors. It focuses more on electricity as well because that's the committee that I have served on. And Senator Murphy has a bill that will reduce CO2 emissions in the transportation sector. And I think this Senate needs to take a good hard look at all of those proposals and make them a priority. And I would never want this to be the only bill that we pass this session. This is only the beginning of a very critical discussion. And it's a critical time for us to be leaders in the area of energy, our energy policy and energy independence. So this is just one piece of that puzzle.
Senator Scoy.
Mr. President and Senator Anderson, if you agree with all of the efforts and the initiatives to achieve energy independence in Minnesota that we just talked about, why are we not addressing those important issues in this renewable energy objectives bill?
I think she tried to. Senator, there are other bills coming forward. So, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, coming from a region of the state whose economy is very dependent on adding value to natural resources, I often remind people that everything that sustains life comes from the ground, virtually everything. And I think oftentimes we don't think of that. We go to the hardware store and we go to the grocery store, and I think often we forget that everything comes out of the ground. The computer on your desk has got probably over a dozen different minerals that are developed into metals to make that computer possible, the glass on your desk or the chair that you're sitting in. And sometimes I think we forget that. And I bring that up because taking natural resources out of the ground and adding value to them takes a lot of energy. And businesses that do that are high energy consumers. And up where I live, anytime we talk about energy, we get real concerned about how that impacts the state's paper mills and the state's taconite plants, because energy is probably a fourth of their entire cost structure. And they now compete not only in an economy in this country, but they compete in a global economy for contracts for paper and for steel. And so I get concerned when we do things that potentially can impact a large part of their cost structure. And so I guess, Senator Anderson, I guess I want to be reassured a little bit that there are some kind of safeguards in this bill that in the event that a steel plant gets the opportunity to be built on the Iron Range. And there is a project moving forward that's about a $1.6 billion investment in this state, and it's probably going to be even bigger than that by the time it's built, that I believe the draft EIS is coming out on next week. And we're going to have an opportunity as a state to produce steel, not iron ore or taconite, but actually produce steel in this state. Slab steel that is not produced anywhere in this country. All of it is imported. And this development of this project, who many people have spent a couple years developing, is going to be a large user of electricity. I believe it's about 450 megawatts in order to make slab steel on the range. And integrating wind into a customer that runs 24/7. You know, the lights aren't going to get shut off on a steel mill at night. And the lights aren't going to get shut off when the wind quits blowing. So wind gets very hard to integrate into that, and you end up building a whole bunch of excess capacity for wind if you're going to meet some kind of a standard. So Senator Anderson, I'd like you to provide me some assurance that in this bill there are some kind of safeguards that I don't read in the paper after the governor signs this bill that the possibility of a steel mill in Minnesota is now dead, that we don't have some kind of way to address these high energy users that are trying to add value to natural resources. I'm a very large supporter of renewable energy, and our paper mills and our wood products plants are way ahead of the legislature. I mean, we have plants on the range that are producing 28% of the energy they need through biomass. They're heating kilns. They're doing all kinds of things in many of the mills up north. They're way ahead of us. But there are other areas, like a new steel plant, where I've got some concern. We compete for this investment in a global economy. And if our cost structure gets out of balance with what the world market price for steel is, that development won't happen here. So, Senator Anderson, can you share with me some insight as to a large industrial user like that? Is there some kind of consideration that the PUC is going to give so that that development can continue to move forward once this bill becomes law?
Senator Dibble, did you wish to?
Thanks, Mr. President. Senator Anderson is tossing the baton because she's taking a little rest here. She worked very hard on this, but she had the support and the help of a lot of folks. A lot of us worked very hard on it, so I thought I'd take a crack at it. This is an extremely good and very important and very valid question. It's very important for Senator Bach to ask this on the Senate floor in the context of this debate so that we can well establish, you know, that he's doing his due diligence and we can establish and reassure folks, because this was a crux of the deal that was struck, and it cuts right to that point. I'll just read from the bill itself on line 3.11, which allows the PUC to modify or delay this standard. It says, "The Commission shall modify or delay the implementation of a standard obligation in whole or in part if the Commission determines it is in the public's interest to do so. The Commission, when requested to do so, must consider," and one of the points is, "the impact of implementing the standard on its customers' utility costs, including the economic and competitive pressure on the utility's customers." It goes on to say, if it finds that there are significant rate impacts, requires significant measures to address reliability, or raises significant technical issues. This was, of course, a point raised frequently and diligently by Senator Pretner Solon, who represents an area in the Northland as well that has industrial customers who absolutely rely on baseload power, uninterrupted power. Minnesota Power raised this issue frequently. The Chamber of Commerce raised this issue, and this is the language that was developed to accommodate that. There actually are some other accommodations further in the bill, but I won't dive into those because it'd take me a while to find them. Minnesota Power supports this bill. The Chamber supports this bill. And I think even I would think that this was a quite important provision to hold. You know, the wind integration study as well speaks to this whole subject. We embarked on a fairly extensive, fairly expensive, very well-supported study, the wind integration study, that shows that Minnesota as a whole can take on this level of renewable energy and address with only incremental cost or even at a cost benefit the reliability issues that Senator Bach raises. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Senator Dibble's point about Minnesota Power supporting the bill, I think that's probably accurate. I think they've come to some agreement, but the difference between Minnesota Power as the supplier of electricity and the end user of electricity, I think, is a different thing, because if the 450 megawatts that a steel plant might need, Minnesota Power currently doesn't produce. They don't have it. It's they're going to build some new base load in this state to supply that, or we're going to import that power. One of those two things will happen. And Minnesota Power simply will pass their costs on. And whatever it costs for them to integrate some renewables into there, they're simply going to pass on to the end user. But so, I mean, I understand Minnesota Power, the situation Minnesota Power is in. My concern is, do we put their end users, the people that are buying the power, at some kind of a competitive disadvantage? That's my concern. I'm pleased to hear about the language in the bill giving the PUC some direction on that, but I remain very concerned about it. I'm going to vote for the bill, but I remain very concerned about how it potentially can impact industrial expansion in this state. Blandin Paper Company up in Senator Saxhog's district is considering a number 7 paper machine in the neighborhood of probably an $800 or $900 million investment in this state. The company that owns Blandin Paper Company is from Finland, and they own paper mills all over the world. And when they come to crunching the numbers about where they're going to invest in a new machine in the world, and they're going to build new machines in the world, they just recently finished one in China. We just have to make sure that these industries that are high energy users, because they're adding value to something coming out of the ground, that we don't put ourselves, this state, in a situation where all that industrial development starts to happen in other countries or maybe other states, and it doesn't happen here. So I'm going to continue to pay close attention to the other bills that come forward related to this as it relates to future economic expansion in our state, because we all want to grow jobs and we want to grow personal income in this state, and we all want a cleaner environment. But all those things are very interrelated in how we move forward. So I look forward to a discussion on the future legislation relative to energy that comes forward, and hope that in the case of the wood products industry, we can recognize for them some credit that they really are already doing the job with renewables by burning large amounts of biomass already to heat kilns that are drying wood chips that are produced into paper and different kinds of wood products. So members, thanks for your indulgence, and thanks for understanding how important energy is to the future of any kind of industrial development in rural Minnesota.
Okay, I have on the list Senator Rosendahl, Limmer, Pariseau, Senjum, Day, in that order. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, I'd like to rise in full support of this bill. Senate File 4 is definitely a passion of love, and I have to commend Senator Anderson for her tenacious vision that she's had in this area, and she's been working on this a very, very long time, and she has come full swing around, members, to see this finally come to fruition. It's very exciting. And my great thanks to Senator Pretner Solon. I truly believe to have pulled this bill off, you have to be a psychologist, because you have to bring all the stakeholders to the table. And everybody had to have their voice at the table, and they did. They had the opportunity to talk about this bill, and they had the opportunity to sign off and voice their opinions and get what they needed. And that's what's so important about this bill. I'd also like to thank the governor. I will never forget last year in the State of the State, I had a clear vision of Senator Anderson. And when the governor said 25% renewable, we both looked at each other didn't we, Senator Anderson? We just went, wow. So his vision is right on, and his leadership in this area has been tremendous, too. So I think we should all thank the governor for leading the charge in this area also. I will say, though, that the good faith effort that the committee members have all put in this process, it's been a little strange. Senator Prettner-Soul, and you all know that. It's been a little strange. So we are putting a lot of faith in the process of this bill and getting it passed because we all have our questions. Some of them have been answered and some of them have not. We have a lot of work to do still. And I think Senator Bach brings up some very good points, and so did Senator Skoy, about, number one, the cost to the businesses. What is the cost to the businesses? And we are certainly taking that very serious in this committee, and we certainly have a lot more work to be done. But I think one of the questions that was brought up in the committee that we should continue to think about is what is renewable energy, and how are we going to promote that, and how are we going to keep it reasonable? And we had a very good discussion on it, but that discussion is not over with when it comes to ethanol, biodiesel, when it comes into bringing in the other players, where did Senator Bach go, about what is the steel industry doing for renewable energy push. We need to know about all that information before we continue on with our own energy proposals. So in closing, members, I just want to say that Minnesota has taken a very aggressive, very strong leadership role in this renewable energy push. We have set the standard. We have set the bar very high for the entire nation to follow, and we should be very proud. But as I said, our work is not done. It's not complete, and we will continue to work in a good faith manner with bringing all the stakeholders to the table. Thank you.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I stand in support of this bill as well. I do want to thank Senator Anderson for her dedicated work on this. This is an important bill. I also want to thank Senator Prettner-Soulin for her leadership in the committee that is, as Senator Rosen said, bringing those parties together the way they did is impressive, and we wouldn't have this agreement without them. What I wanted to talk about is the jobs aspect of this. The environment is important, and that's one of the things that's driving us forward. But the jobs development aspect of this is equally important. We've had some testimony from Minnesota-based companies, D.H. Blattner and M.A. Mortensen Construction. These two are Minnesota companies that currently account for over 80% of the construction of wind turbines in the United States, but very few of those are right here in Minnesota. This gives them the opportunity to do that construction right here in Minnesota. If we're going to develop steel manufacturing in the range, we can use that steel in, you know, manufacturing plants on the prairie to develop these wind turbines. So the economic benefits are right there. We can develop a new, robust, and vital industry here in the state and be a leader. We've also heard from organized labor. United Steel Workers and United Auto Workers are among them. They believe that this legislation is going to attract a lot of manufacturing companies as well, additional jobs for the state. And just for as a point of example of the potential here, in Germany, over 40,000 well-paying jobs are created by the wind industry. And in the steel that the orders that they have outpace the for wind turbines what they get for the auto industry. So it's got huge potential. I think we can do the same and better in the state. I think the legislation is a part of a reasonable, responsible solution for our state's energy future needs. And I support this, and I urge all of our members to do the same. Thank you.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President and members, when we started the discussion today, we were warned by the authors that they would not accept any amendments. That certainly is fair to give the body a fair warning that no new idea is unacceptable by the authors. But I would like to reserve the right of at least our caucus, that we reserve the right to bring any amendment to the floor of the Senate. That's what we're elected to do. That's what we're allowed to do. That, as Senator Day once said, we all contribute $100 to run for office. And as a privilege of running for office and winning an election, That's what we're here for, to have public discussion on any policy, and that certainly would include any amendment. Having said that, I did have a couple questions to the authors. Perhaps Senator Anderson could yield to a question.
She will yield, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Anderson, I wanted to know, and if I could bring your attention to page 3, lines 14 and 15 of the bill, there's a reference to whether or not the consumer will be recognized in any future decision or discussion by the PUC, and that the PUC must consider at least the impact of implementing these standards on consumers' utility costs. Now, how would that work? By the language, it said they must consider, but do they have the authority to hold back or reduce or make some type of impact on the consumer pricing in the middle of this direction we're going?
Senator Anderson, I wanted you to, yeah. We'll check that rule out in a minute there, Senator Limmer. Senator Anderson.
Mr. President and Senator Limmer, the language is what Senator Dibble just read and what we've had quite a bit of discussion about that you're referring to. What happens is a utility would have the ability to bring this issue forward, but in the integrated resource plan, that's we don't limit it to the discussion during the integrated resource plan, but that it's appropriate for discussion during the integrated resource plan process at the PUC, which takes place every 2 years for each utility. And the Chamber of Commerce and other representatives of consumers, of utility consumers, are always at the table during that process. And the Chamber's position has always been that their number one, I don't want to speak for them because I don't want to misquote them, but the cost to their members of utility rates has always been a very high priority for them. And I've had extensive conversations with the Chamber and with the PUC about this issue, and it's clear that the Chamber already brings these issues up, cost competitiveness to customers. They've done that before, and they're entitled to do that in these proceedings when we're talking about the cost of new energy generation, and they will continue to do that. This just puts it on the list, so it makes it clear that the PUC needs to consider this as one factor.
Mr. President.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Also, Senator Anderson, if I could direct you still on the same page to lines 22 through 24, when the Commission considers modifying or delaying the implementation of standard obligations, it claims that they could only do that if it finds a cause would significantly impact the rate impact. And I know that there's no definition in this bill to determine what significant means. So I'm a little nervous about that. We have that elsewhere in state law. We use that word. But when we're giving this authority to a PUC, they're not elected. They're regulatory in their confines of their job responsibility. They don't have the same responsibility relationship with the consumer as we might, because we have to stand for election every year. So I get a little nervous when we give a commission the opportunity to do it, but then we kind of hamstring them a little bit and use a term significant, must have a significant impact. I'm not quite sure what that means. Now, I believe you've got a pretty good number of votes that are going to vote for this today. But I think we do have to be very cautious when we start reinventing where our energy comes from, much less other areas in environmental protection, by sometimes moving far out in the future and yet not having very specific references when we're talking about consumer pricing. The reason I'm bringing this line of questioning up is I do remember when this body once created a bill to make home construction, home insulation, home energy requirements to be the most improved energy saving codes in the country. We made that a goal in statute. We didn't know where we were going, but we put it in our statutes, and as a result, we kind of looked at it. We trusted the people from the University of Minnesota, the cold climate people, to tell us what was good standards for our home construction. Well, we all know the story. We thought that if a little insulation's good, a lot of insulation is better, and we created standards that literally created mold incubators out of new homes. We've all heard the horror stories around our state of where new construction has really become a huge tragedy for many, many people in their homes. Actually, there have been some people who have died over that mold infestation in their homes. So as we go into the search for new sciences, new industries, trying to save, trying to conserve, noble goals, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, because if we don't really know what we're doing, we got to be very cautious. And it can be a matter of life and death, as we've seen in our home construction standards that still have not changed today. We're still relying on those energy codes that still keep mold growing in our homes of our constituents.
Senator Pariseau, would you wish to?
Thank you, Mr. President. Yes, I have a simple question of Senator Anderson. It sounds like she has a lot of data at her fingertips. And while I haven't heard anybody else ask this question, I'm kind of concerned about how many utilities today are before the Public Utilities Commission. Do you have a sense how many are there for rate increases at this time, and how many are probably going to be there in the next several years for rate increases that we don't even know about yet, and the disposal of those? And I think that's a big factor into what we're looking at here, piling this on top of what we don't even know for the next several years.
Senator Anderson, do you have that?
Mr. Chairman, I actually don't know the answer to that, except to say that I know that Xcel and CenterPoint, which is a gas utility, have gone through major rate increase proceedings in the last year. What I'm not sure about is if they're concluded or if they're ongoing at this point. But they're already asking for rate increases, whether or not they're doing renewable energy. And again, as I mentioned, they've indicated that having more renewable energy helps to keep their rates down.
Senator,
Mr. President, it concerns me a lot that the people who are being served by utilities don't have any idea from month to month what their utility bill will be. Mine happened to go up about $66 in 1 month. And I'm served by one of the utilities that Senator Anderson just mentioned. And it's been going up every month. There's something going on there. But, I mean, we have a lot of utilities, and there are several of them probably contemplating future treks to the Utility Commission asking for rate increases. And we don't even know where we're going with this.
Senator Senjum, Senator Day, Senator Kubley, Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Senator Mr. Chairman, and members. I rise, I think, on a couple of points. One of them, I think we all recognize that Senator Anderson and Senator Solon have done a lot of work on this bill, and that renewable energy is with us, and we're going to be going down this path one way or another. What does bother me, though, Mr. Chair and members, is that we seem to be getting into a situation here on the Senate floor where amendments are not the usual order of the day. And whether it was Senator Bach's bill a week or so ago or this one today, I think the minority needs to have an opportunity, for that matter, even other members of the majority, to bring forth amendments if they have one. That's again why they built this place. This is a place where ideas need to be debated, and I don't think we can forget that. And the fact that somehow amendments are stifled, or the very idea that we bring amendments forth, is is not in accord with the wishes of the Senate, and I think that that's wrong. I do have, Mr. Chair, an amendment today. I'm going to hold it. I'm going to bring it forward again through the committee process on into the Energy Committee, and hopefully get a hearing on that and get some votes, because I think it does deserve discussion, and I think it in and of itself is meritorious. But beyond that, Mr. Chair, what I want to talk about a little bit more specific to the bill, and I think it's been somewhat referred to by Senator Limmer and others, but I think as history looks back at this bill, and perhaps I could dialogue a little bit with Senator Anderson on it, on page 3, the lines 22, 23, and 24, where I think you know full well we're in the off-ramp section of this bill, where we talk about the commission may modify or delay implementation, only if it would cause significant rate impacts, significant measures to address reliability, and so on and so forth. But that word significant, I think, looms very large. And I think as people look back on this bill, lawyers and politicians, there's going to be a need to define that a little bit. And what I would like to know, at least from Senator Anderson, is a little bit more about legislative intent with respect to that word significant. And it's a hard word to measure. It's a hard word, obviously, to put into articulate fashions. But I think we do need to, as we stand here today, debating this bill and thinking about it and voting on it, I think it is important that history is clear on what the author believes that word to mean in terms of perhaps even some level of quantification. Could either of the authors help me with this, Senator Solon?
Senator Prentner Solon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Sanjam, we did have considerable discussion about the term significant and whether or not we should put in statute how much of a rise in cost would indicate that there need to be a halt to the project. However, it was very difficult to quantify that, and it was decided that the PUC needed some latitude to be able to deal with this in the real world based on factors that are impacting it at the time. They have been able to handle these situations thus far, and it just felt that this is something that they could continue to do. We can always come back and revisit this if we find that it doesn't work, but at this point it seemed that these are five people that are appointed to this position to handle situations like this, and that latitude should be provided to them. And however, indicating it had to be a significant impact, so that that gives them some direction.
Senator Sanjam.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Prentner. So just to clarify, because again, this is history, I believe. We're suggesting here, the author is suggesting that the PUC, acting as a body, will define significant, and whatever they decide certainly may be challenged, but that is the end all in terms of who makes that decision. Is that right?
Senator Prentner Solon.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sanjam, that is correct.
Okay. Any Senator Day, did you have a...
Mr. Chairman and Senator Anderson, you mentioned when we started that we weren't taking any amendments or nobody could offer any amendments. What's that all about?
I think it's any senator's prerogative to offer amendments. She was suggesting that the bill's in pretty good shape, but Senator Anderson, did you...
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right. Of course, any senator in this body has the right to offer an amendment. I asked senators not to offer any amendments, and that would be as a courtesy not so much to me, but to all the people that put together an agreement that is very delicate and very hard to come by. Now, that doesn't mean... We are the senators, and we get to decide. We're the deciders, and that's okay. But I, as a courtesy to all of this work that has been done, I think it's we have a really good bill, and I respect how difficult it's been to put this bill together in the shape that it is. And so I gave my word that I won't offer any amendments or support any amendments. And all the members of the committee were part of that discussion, and we all heard the stakeholders talk about, through the weeks that we spent on this, their concerns, and we know, we recognize how difficult it was for each one of them to be able to support this and all the language that's in it. And so we know that it's a delicate balance, and even if a minor change was made to it, we could lose all of that work and all of that compromise is such a difficult and delicate thing that it can be upset by the smallest change. And sure, if there's an amendment that you want to offer or someone else wants to offer and the Senate passes it, so be it. I have to live with that, and then I will continue to try to pass my bill. But I think we're all in a very lucky position here that on a bill of such great significance that we have an opportunity in time to move forward with a consensus and with a compromise. And I just encourage members to support that and respect that.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator,
to that, I'm going to vote for the bill, and I think it's a good bill. But please respect all of us that ran for office, that we're in the Minnesota State Senate, and, you know, if we're all just going to say no amendments, then let's just have some cookies and some coffee, and we'll all sit in the back room and just talk about things, and then we'll come out and push the buttons. I mean, it takes away from whether it was Senator Scully, I don't see him here, but seemed like he had some things. And for somebody to say that we've worked this all out and everybody agrees, I don't really care if they worked it all out. If somebody here can stand up on the floor and convince me they have a good amendment, I'd vote for it. I just think for the good of all of us, not just for the minority. I just hope that people don't stand up. I mean, I can't imagine in the 16 years I was here I would stand up. Well, we know it would never work because I was always in a minority. But I'd say, okay, I don't want anybody to offer any amendments on my bill. So I just hope we don't start doing that, because if within a caucus you want to decide to do that, fine. But at least allow us a little dignity with our constituents across the state of Minnesota that we're elected, that we can stand on the Senate floor and offer any darn thing we want. That's and right. Sometimes we offer foolish things. We all know that, and I've done that a few times. But, you know, so be it. So it's just something I hope we don't start doing.
Yeah, let me just say, for one person, I don't know if I'm speaking as president or what, but I think that is the case, Senator Limmer, Senator Senjum, and Senator Day. These people work so darn hard on this thing, and they've got their arms around it, and they love it, and maybe the words were a little strong, but I agree, though. We are all elected by folks, and we do have a say here, so I think we're Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely, and this is a democracy. And I just want to be very, very clear that this is not a Democrat or a Republican issue. This bill shouldn't be, and this agreement shouldn't be. And, you know, the Democrats didn't even have a caucus to talk about it, so it's certainly not a caucus decision that no amendments be accepted. Nothing could be further from the truth. This is Senator Prettner-Solon and I asking the members of the Senate to respect this compromise, and if you choose not to, you are fully entitled to do that.
Mr. Chairman, it's nothing to do with the bill.
Yeah, that
it's nothing to do with the bill. It's just saying, I don't think we should get in the habit that somebody says, and we're not taking any amendments. I mean, once we decided that, I started working on my NASCAR fantasy league thing that I have to get in by Friday, because I figured, well, some things that people say are important, some things they don't, but if we aren't going to have a vote on them and it's not a lively dialogue to get something more accomplished, you know, back to the fantasy NASCAR.
Okay. Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess there are a variety of topics brought up. I'd certainly support anyone who wants to offer an amendment, too. I think it's, just on a bill that has got a lot of support that, that's been asked for, and I would hope that it wouldn't be a regular thing as well. I do think, it does seem like whenever we're moving into a new arena, and we definitely are moving into a new arena with this bill, at least in this country, we have a certain amount of fears that become, visible maybe, and, we're a little reluctant to charge ahead without getting some reassurance that that we can do that without having the outcomes that we're afraid of. But I do think with the number of agencies that are supporting this bill that that some of those fears should be assuaged just by the fact that of the people that have signed on to this. I don't think, for instance, that the Minnesota Chamber would agree to support a bill that would cause a significant, whatever that means, Senator Sangem, a significant increase to the consumers of electricity here in Minnesota. You know, it does seem to me that the Public Utilities Commission, they have five members, and when you look at those members, I guess I've known a number of them in my years here at the legislature, and this is only my 11th session, some of you have been here quite a bit longer than that. But, they could think, some of them might think that a significant rate increase was 2/10 of a cent, and another might think that 2 cents would be significant, and they'd have a fairly wide range in what they deem to be significant. So they'll have to have that argument amongst themselves. But I do think, I do kind of wonder why it is that there are countries in the world that have over half of their power nationally generated from renewable sources that integrate those things into the grid without a great deal of difficulty and see it more of an opportunity than a problem. But here we tend to perceive it as a problem, and I'm not sure why that is. I offered one member of the Midwest Independent Operators Group to offer a bill to send the MISO members to Germany where they could visit with the folks on the MISO there to find out why they have such a different approach to integrating renewables into the grid. He at first thought that would be a good idea, and I said, okay, it's done, but then he decided maybe it wasn't such a good idea after all. He didn't know if he wanted to do that. But, it does seem to me that as we look at the current uses, the current production of electricity here within Minnesota, I think we had that mercury reduction bill here last year primarily because the people are supporting it. I had one fellow who lives out on the western edge of the state near the Big Stone plant who has taken his grandchildren fishing in Big Stone Lake, and he says he doesn't like the idea that his grandchildren can't eat the fish they catch there. And, well, another person who was with him said that, he'd been fishing there a number of times, and his grandchildren were willing to eat whatever he caught there because he hadn't caught a thing. But, it just depends on your ability in that department. But it does seem to me that, we've had mercury reduction because the people want it. Now we're considering carbon reduction, again, I think, because the people want it. I think if we're going to have people requesting that we reduce the emissions from the state's power plants that are currently here, then we need to look at renewables as being the most viable form of alternative energy on the horizon. It doesn't seem to me that there are going to be other places that have the same kind of non-emissions that renewables do. I mean, there aren't going to be any emissions from wind generation. There aren't going to be any emissions from hydroelectric generation. So, it just seems to me that if people are going to ask us to reduce these emissions that are currently there, that this is one of the few alternatives that we have to move the state forward to allow the citizens of the state to have the kind of state they would like. you know, I guess I would like to say to some of the earlier things that were raised, you know, there are a number of pieces coming down the pike. You know, I've introduced Senate File 480 that does deal with renewable fuels, once again, looking at kind of a second generation of ethanol plants for the state of Minnesota, and I know that there's been a good deal of discussion in Senator Solon's committee on the seabed legislation, so I think there are a variety of pieces on the horizon, and we don't need to feel that we need to do everything within the renewable energy category with one bill. I think we can move ahead with this bill and deal with the other pieces as they come along.
Okay, I have Stumpf, Senator Stumpf, Senator Carlson, Senator Dibble, Senator Thomasoni, and Senator Rummel. Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I'll try to keep it short. I know most everybody has already spoken. The one issue that I want to mention is it's important to generate electricity, and it's certainly important to generate renewable electricity, and it's certainly important to have conservation, and I'm glad to hear that conservation will be an issue that we'll deal with shortly. The one thing about conservation is that we should also include geothermal, which is next to the sun, it's the greatest source of energy that we have. On this particular bill, though, I do want to mention that we can generate all kinds of renewable energy, whether it's wind or any other energy, but if we can't move that energy from one place to another, then it's of very little use. And so my hope is that the PUC, which is going to have the responsibility before 2010 when this bill actually takes effect, is that they will have plotted out and in place a system of transmission or collection of the power that it can be moved from one place to another. And that's a difficult issue because I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think a lot of the environmental community is behind and supporting this bill. Well, let's see if that environmental community is going to be behind and support the corridors that we want to transmit that energy from one place to another. And I would call on them that they should not be the obstacles to moving power from one place to another, because we have that power, that new power now, and renewable power to move. So that's my concern.
Senator Anderson, in response to Senator
Stumpf. Stumpf, yes, briefly. Senator Stumpf, you raise a very good point, and I do want to point out that the environmental and renewable energy advocates who all appeared in front of the committee emphasized that if we pass this bill, they will be working hard to support the building of the transmission because we need their help to do it. It is going to be a big job, a lot of heavy lifting, and so we're all going to need to work together to support that.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a really good bill for Minnesota. As it's been said, we import 100% of the coal, of the natural gas, and of the oil that we use in this state. And we also are one of the largest importers of electricity. This leaves us very vulnerable. It's unacceptably vulnerable for a technical person like myself. We need to have some sort of energy independence that will help us have our economic independence. Just like our national situation, we need to be sure that we are independent from the people that can cut us off. SF4 is a very important and bold step towards that independence. And I want to praise Senator Anderson and Senator Pretner Solon for brokering the deal. And this, I hope that you can find a way to support it. Thank you very much.
Senator Dibble, did you wish to?
Senator
thanks,
Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. President. Just very briefly, as a courtesy to one of my colleagues, and also as a courtesy to Senator Anderson, because she did describe that this was a delicate balance and a hard-arrived-at compromise. I think I misspoke in my earlier comments saying that the chamber supports this bill. They support the language and ask for the inclusion of the language that I was citing in my conversation with Senator Bach. I think the more accurate description of the chamber's position is neutral on the bill, so I didn't want to leave people with a misimpression.
Okay, I think we're going to try to wrap this up. We're going to hear from Thomasoni and Senator Rummel, and then unless anybody else thinks they have to say something that hasn't already been said. Senator Thomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I hope I'm going to say things that haven't been said, but I do have to piggyback on some of the things that have been said. Laying foundation, Senator Borgermiller. Okay, all right. You know, one of the things we have to remember about Minnesota is a small dot in the whole equation of conservation and clean air and clean water. And while we can do our best here to clean up what we can clean up, we have to remember that over 90% of our pollution comes from somewhere else. And having said that, we also have to understand that this transmission issue that Senator Stump brought up is a huge issue. Minnesota Power tried to build a power line that has been taking 20 years to build. And so when you think about doing the things that we're thinking about doing, we need at least three big power lines in the state of Minnesota to get the power across the state to where it needs to go and to where the end users are. And if we rush into something like this and we don't have the capacity to move the power, we might be putting ourselves into rolling brownouts and rolling blackouts. So we have to be very, very careful about what we're doing here, because if you believe in that there is global warming, it's going to be hot in the summertime and we're going to need air conditioners. And if we don't have the power to push the air conditioners, we will have rolling brownouts and we'll be complicating our situation by doing this, and that's why I'm going to urge this body to make sure that any more bills that we do on energy are very, very cautious bills and that take into consideration the potential effects here. Senator Hahn and Senator Paris are concerned about the cost, and rightly so, because this could drive the cost up. Senator Bach and Senator Scully have some very important concerns that I think we have to take a look at. Up in our area of the state, up on the Iron Range, we're doing a lot of things already in regards to this. The Hibbing PUC and the Virginia PUC have converted their coal burning to biomass. MinTac, the largest taconite plant in the world, is burning over 7,000 truckloads of wood every year. And if they weren't doing that, they'd be burning coal or natural gas. But, you know, Minnesota Power is the one who supplies most of that power to these taconite plants and to these paper mills, and they are buying 100 megawatts of power a day because they don't have enough. And so now we're going to something that, if the wind doesn't blow and we're reliant on wind energy on the grid, what's going to happen to these places where we have a need for baseload power? You know, one of the other things we did was we were starting a wind energy park in Virginia so that we can build windmills. Well, these factories need baseload power. So we might be creating a whole bunch of jobs in the windmill industry by building windmills, but we still need baseload power to supply the energy for these plants that are supplying these jobs. So, members, I'm just going to urge us to be very, very cautious, because we have a good bill here. A lot of people worked real hard on it. I compliment them. I think they got buy-in from the industry pretty well, and that most people are convinced that this is the direction we need to go. But we aren't going to solve all the world's problems here in Minnesota, and we have to be very, very careful about what the next step is, and that the rest of our energy policy doesn't actually complicate what's going on in the creation in the area of creation of jobs and in the area of what we do to clean up our environment. China is building a new power plant every 7 to 10 days with conventional coal. We are getting that pollution, folks. And so the things we do here, well, it will help a little bit. It may be only what Senator Hahn said. It might be only about 2% as opposed to what this appears to be, which is 25%. So, members, I'm just standing here to say the follow-up bills have to be cautious and have to take into consideration what could possibly happen as a result of this bill.
Senator Rummel, and we're gonna vote. Senator Rummel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of this body. So far, we have been talking at ground level, and it's a very important important level to be on, but for a minute I'd like to bring you up to the 5,000-foot level. There are polls that show, national polls, that show 90% of Minnesotans are very concerned about global energy, as most of this country is. Most Americans believe that the government is not doing enough to address the issues of global energy. Our faith leaders tell us that this is more than a quality of life issue. It's a moral issue that we are dealing with. Global warming creates traumatic climactic events. Think of New Orleans. Think of the expense of New Orleans. Okay. This bill is just one step in our ability as leaders to address global warming. It is not the whole answer, but it is part of the answer. It creates the momentum that our, I believe, our voters and I believe our church leaders are asking us to take. I would urge all of you as members of this body to support the decision of our community, our committee, to pass this bill 100%. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate file number 4, Senator Dibble, Hand, and then we are going to move on. Senator Dibble.
Mr. President, thanks. When we do get to a vote, I'd like to request a roll call.
There are three hands for roll call. There will be a roll call. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I know we're getting close to a vote here, and I think I would guess it's probably going to pass, but I think some of the remarks that have been made are very pertinent, and I appreciate Senator Tomasoni and Senator Bach. And I think the consideration is not only our cost, but also what are we going to do about power and how we're going to generate it and what are these larger environmental concerns and how well they're going to be addressed by what we're proposing to do. And I think I've only been here now for 4 years, going on 5 years, and we've talked about energy a number of times. It seems like most of the time we talk about energy, we talk about windmills. And we haven't talked about power plants. We haven't talked about when we're going to build another power plant. I would like to see a nuclear power plant. That's my bias, my preference. I think that is a good way to go. But we haven't talked about building baseline power. We talk about the idea of renewables and windmills, and I think we all agree that there's a place for this and that there's a need for it, and we got to do it. But we are not talking about how we're going to address the fundamental, the majority of the energy needs we have. And so I would urge us as we go forward to not lose sight of the fact that we're going to need lots of energy to go into the future. And windmills are not going to do it. I guess I'm kind of reminded of, what is it, Don Quixote in the story, who was tilting. I was going to say Senator Anderson is kind of the Don Quixote of the Senate, but he was actually tilting at windmills. So I guess you're not on that side of the deal. But I think we ought to consider looking at the bigger picture, as Senator Tomasoni said. What are the energy needs we're going to have, and how are we going to meet them? Are windmills the answer? I don't think so. They may be able to provide some help, but let's think about the big picture. Thank you.
There being no further discussion, the question occurs on the motion of Senator Anderson that Senate file number 4 be recommended to pass. The Secretary will take the roll on Senate file number 4. Motion to pass. This is the, no amendments. Senator Cohen, is he? Are they excused? All right, Secretary will close the roll. It'll be at 61 ayes and 4 nays. The bill is recommended to pass. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the committee do now arise and report.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President, I move that the report of the committee of the whole, as kept by the Secretary, be now adopted.
On the Pogemiller motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. There's a on that first page. couple of changes. Senate File 589 and the first second page, if we refer to the Finance Committee, page 5, Senate File 618 will be referred to the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee without objection. First reading of Senate bills. Next order of business is announcements of Senate interest. Senator Betzel, did you have a...
Thank you, Mr. President. The State Government Budget Division will meet 1/2 hour after the session ends so members can get a chance to eat, but we do need to get there properly because this limits the time that we'll have to meet today. State Government Budget, 1/2 hour after the adjournment.
Senator Chaudhry.
Thanks. The members of the Environment Policy Committee take a half hour for lunch, but if you could please be there by 1:30. We need a quorum. We're going to be voting on dedicated funding.
Announcement, Senator Marty.
Mr. President, Health and Housing and Family Security Committee will meet in 15 minutes.
Senator Saltzman. Senator.
The Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee will meet in a half an hour as well at 1:30. Thank you.
Further announcements without objection, Senator Cohen and Latz will be excused from all day today's session all day. Senator Pariseau from 11 to 11:15. Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate adjourn till Thursday, February 8th, 11 a.m.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Senate stands adjourned.